Did you know it may be possible to upgrade your military discharge characterization? Today, our expert, a retired U.S. Air Force judge advocate, walks us through the discharge review board process. Stick around for this, the 30th episode of the Military Wallet Podcast.
Welcome to the Military Wallet Podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to bringing you the most up-to-date information on military and veterans' benefits. Here is your host, Ryan Ginnall.
Welcome to the Military Wallet Podcast. Today, we are talking about military discharges and getting that discharge characterization upgraded. Many people don't know that it can be possible in some circumstances to apply or appeal for a characterization upgrade. So today, we are joined by Farah Osbeck, who's a retired U.S. Air Force judge advocate, and she now has her own personal practice where she helps veterans kind of right the wrongs or go through their characterization and appeals process and that kind of thing. So Farah, thank you for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you currently do?
Yes. First, thanks so much, Ryan, for having me on your show. I'm really happy to be able to share some tips with your listeners. So I'm actually a retired Air Force judge advocate, you said. I was in the Air Force for 22 years, and during those 22 years, I was a JAG. So I, you know, started out being a prosecutor. I was a defense counsel, staff judge advocate. I had a lot of jobs in the Air Force, but one of my favorite jobs actually was when I worked at what's called the Air Force Review Boards Agency. And that's an agency, it's a Secretary of Air Force level agency where we actually got to review all the cases of military members who were being discharged, who were actually applying for a medical retirement, who were being court-martialed. We actually at the secretarial level just reviewed all the cases that came from the military commands and made sure that when we analyzed the cases and made a recommendation to the Secretary of the Air Force that the cases were evaluated under justice, due process, equity, and fairness. And one of the boards actually that I was privileged to actually be on was called the Air Force Discharge Review Board. So I was the senior legal advisor, and I would give legal advice on the boards that actually looked at these cases. And Ryan, so what this board was, it was a board where we actually looked at the cases where a veteran who was discharged applied to the Secretary of Air Force to have their discharge upgraded. Of course, I was in the Air Force, but it applies the same to every service. And sometimes we would just review these cases, a records review, and sometimes we'd review them where the member came in person, and we can probably discuss that later. But that was, again, one of my favorite jobs because we really tried to ensure that justice existed for all the veterans who were applying for the upgrades. But so after I retired, I had a couple of jobs. I worked for a year at a law firm, and I recently, started my own law practice where I actually, one of my niches and things that I really love doing is helping veterans who were perhaps unjustly discharged upgrade their discharge. I do other things, help guide people who are under investigation. I also, because I was a senior legal advisor for officers who were, did the cases where officers were being retired and they commit misconduct. So they sometimes retired at lower grades. So I have expertise in that area and currently helping clients rebut so they can actually retire in grade as opposed to retiring lower grades. Also do, Board of Correction military records work as well. So a little of varying degrees of different practices that I have that I'm really enjoying because I get to actually do my passion, which is working with veterans and active duty members who are, facing some difficulties in their life.
Yeah, it sounds like you've seen just a little bit about pretty much everything as far as the law applies to service members who are, currently serving or veterans who are looking to kind of change their records and that kind of thing. So let's talk real quickly about the importance of the discharge characterization as it applies to veterans. So obviously, for those who are listening, we're directing this primarily towards veterans who already have a discharge, and that could be an honorable, other than honorable, there's dishonorable. Can you talk a little bit about the characterization and the importance of that?
Yeah, well, actually, the characterization is very important for a lot of reasons. The one thing that jumps to mind is you know, veteran, well, military members who've served their country and, you know, for the most part, honorably, if they get discharged and they get a general discharge, which is general under honorable conditions, it's under honorable conditions, but it's not a full honorable discharge. They're not entitled to the post 9/11 GI Bill. That's hundreds. Well, it could be, you know, up to $100,000 or more in benefits. I mean, I know how important that is because I got it. I transferred it to my son. So just a wonderful benefit that the Department of Defense give veterans who serve their country. So if, you know, again, if you don't have an honorable, you lose that and you can, you're entitled to that honorable discharge if you serve for 36 months or actually and get an honorable discharge or actually even less than 36. They just prorate the amount of tuition reimbursement you would get. Also, just people getting jobs. If you, you know, list that you have a general discharge, a lot of times the employers will, you know, wonder why don't you have an honorable discharge? So it could negatively impact you from getting jobs. You know, a myriad of reasons. Of course, if you get an under than honorable conditions discharge, which is UOTHC for short, that could affect, you know, medical retirement, medical pension, VA benefits, et cetera. So, you know, getting an honorable discharge or at least under honorable conditions is critical for, you know, your life after the military.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I get a lot of questions about on my website. I do have an article about the different types of discharge statuses or characterizations, and we get a lot of questions about that and certain benefits. And actually, I think that's how you found my website. I think you found one of the articles that I have, and you reached out to me, and I'm really glad you did because this is a topic that I, you know, I'm not legally trained, so I can go read things on websites and I can kind of assimilate that data and put it together. But it's not the same as talking to an expert such as yourself and presenting this information to all the veterans and our readers. So what I'm actually going to do for all of you who are listening is I'm going to take this podcast and we'll put it inside an article as well so that anybody who finds this article on our website will be able to stream the podcast through the web, or they can also just download through iTunes or Google Play or anything else. But we really want to give this resource to people so that they can use this kind of as a guideline to get the process started for themselves or use it for kind of further research. So as you were saying, Farah, there are some times where somebody might have a general discharge is still honorable, but if they have it's under honorable conditions, but they might not be eligible for certain ratings, or they may have an under honorable conditions or some other rating. And let's talk about some of the things that let's say they got this rating and they don't feel that is a just rating based on their service or based on the circumstances. Obviously, mistakes can happen. What are some of the common mistakes that you've seen, and what are some of the things that veterans can do or that could lead to these mistakes happening?
Okay. Yeah. So basically, from my time when I worked at the Personnel Council and actually was on the board, we actually were voting members of the board to determine, to actually recommend whether an airman's discharge should be upgraded. So I got to see, I'd say hundreds, I don't know exactly, but hundreds of discharge applications from veterans who wanted to upgrade their discharge. So number one is, as far as when someone is trying to upgrade their discharge, you know, they use the DD Form 293, but the basis for the discharge is, if there was some unfairness, it's actually called inequity or impropriety. So those are the two bases. We can't just look at a case and say, okay, we're, you know, if there, you're right. There's no like six, a lot of people have this misnomer about 6 months later, you could upgrade your discharge. It was like some rumor out there. So that's obviously not the case, but you know, mistakes happen. I mean, I've been at legal offices. Sometimes things happen that are not fair that we, you know, the people looking at these cases don't see up front, but the for inequity and impropriety, inequity just means this was unfair. For example, an airman might have been discharged and later they submit an application and they say, you know, well, I had four fail to goes, I got four LORs, but during the time, you know, X, Y, and Z was happening in my unit, my supervisor was unfair, he was prejudiced against me. You know, they could have different reasons where, you know, if they could substantiate what happened and why there was some unfairness in the discharge, there was not enough information, and he or she can get letters of support, et cetera, to show that, you know, there was just some unfairness, either due to discrimination, not enough misconduct really to merit the discharge, Or, you know, that could be a basis. And just a little tip for your listeners, I will say, out of all the cases I've seen, there were some cases we looked at where on its face, we didn't need to meet the airman. We saw, okay, this is definitely inequity or impropriety. But when the member actually came in and did a personal appearance, I will tell you they had a substantially higher chance of getting their discharge upgraded. I just wanted to add that because when you get to see the person, you know, face to face, the board members sit there. In our case, we're at Andrews Air Force Base. That's where the main, you know, office is for the personnel council. That airman would come in. They would sometimes come in with witnesses. They would come in with family members and explain. And we got to see, I mean, obviously we don't just upgrade a discharge. We made a determination whether they were credible. They would, you know, swear to tell the truth. We would swear them in and they would, you know, provide an account of why they thought their discharge was unfair. And I will just, you know, just as a tip, if you can, try to go in person. It really helps your case. So again, just this unfairness of based on the facts that you bring forward to the board of why it was unfair. The impropriety is really, there's something illegal about your discharge. For example, they made a mistake. You had one LOR, you then, you know, had another punishment, but you were not given a chance for rehabilitation, even though your commander said, you know, you're going to have a chance for rehabilitation. Or you had two letters of reprimand and the first sergeant just, you could tell, did not like you and they discharged you. And somehow the legal office, you know, signed off on your discharge. That's clearly not legally sufficient. I mean, it's not enough to get discharged for two LORs. So there's some impropriety, something illegal about your case. Perhaps you bring forward evidence there was reprisal and that would be legal. You were being punished somehow unjustly for reprisal by, you know, your supervisory chain after you filed an IG complaint. So, you know, that's just what I can think of off the top of my head. But I'm not going to say, Ryan, that, you know, you apply for an upgrade and your discharge is going to be upgraded. That's not the case. But if you actually have, you know, valid, credible reasons where there's some unfairness that you can bring forward that perhaps was not brought forward during your discharge, that could be evaluated. And one thing I wanted to say, Ryan, as far as the discharge, you got to remember when people are in the service and being discharged, sometimes they're airmen in 2-3 years and they're under so much stress, they don't even go to see a defense counsel. They're just like, they waive their rights and they just want to get the heck out of there. And if they had gone to a defense counsel, you know, there's military defense counsel or civilian, maybe the defense counsel would have pointed out some things to fight the discharge. Unfortunately, the young airmen, you know, don't consider that. So, you know, there are cases, again, that we look at it and we noticed, hey, they never even, you know, rebutted the discharge because they were just under so much stress and didn't want to deal with whatever they were undergoing at the time. So that's really the type of cases we saw, you know, unfairness or some type of illegality or inequity. And just to reemphasize our charter, I mean, we had like a logo for the personnel council, and it really made me proud to be a member of that council because we looked at every case under the four pillars of justice, due process, equity, and fairness. And every one of our board members took that very seriously to make sure the cases were reviewed, you know, did have all those factors. And that might not have existed at the time the military member was in the service. So,
yeah, that's a good point to bring up. Two things I wanted to point it out there. The first was that members might not know about their right to due process, or especially people who are newer to the service, they don't know some of the benefits or resources that are available to them. And, you know, I've spoken with many people via my website and in person who don't know how to handle certain situations. And for anybody who's listening, it's certainly important to go out and get every amount of help that you can, whether that's your area defense counsel, or if you're in, you know, the JAG, whoever it is in your branch of the service, or go speak to a first sergeant or a trusted service member or somebody else who can point you in the right direction. The other thing that you mentioned was, people who didn't have that resource available at that time. And that's actually a good segue because, many years ago, you know, we have a lot of readers who were Vietnam era veterans. And a lot of those veterans were in the military at a time, in the time where it was, a lot, you know, is kind of the the macho culture, if you will. And there are a lot of veterans from that time period who had undiagnosed post-traumatic stress disorder. And I know that the DOD has been paying a lot of special attention to that in recent years. Can you talk about the new directives that the DOD has brought forward and how that applies to some of the veterans from that era and this era, and what they can do in regard to their discharge status or characterization?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. Actually, and I follow this area very carefully based on my practice of law. But, you know, I know in December of 2016, 30 December, actually, the DOD sent out a memo. I mean, really, they're just doing everything they can to try to make veterans aware that they can apply to get their discharges upgraded. And so they sent out a memo. I mean, I read it on the DOD website. And basically, you know, the reason they're doing it, just to tell you, obviously, is they want to make sure that people who, you know, serve their country, our great country and nation, they want to ensure these veterans deserve, you know, get what they deserve, the benefits they deserve, whether it's GI Bill, or whether it's, you know, medical care, et cetera. So they have a, you know, big passion to make sure they take care of their veterans. So in this renewed effort to send this memo out, they actually reiterated guidance that was sent out in 2014. September 2014, the Secretary of Defense, Secretary Hagel at the time, sent out a memo basically stating that, hey, if you were discharged and there is some evidence that you had PTSD or PTSD-related symptoms, please, I mean, they're basically encouraging you, you know, you could apply to get your discharge upgraded. And really, the memo emphasizes if you had a discharge under other than honorable conditions. So it actually has under than honorable. But I will tell you, even though that memo says, you know, they're emphasizing for people who got the UOTHC discharges, you could still apply, of course, if you had a general and want an honorable. But what they determined is, you know, Vietnam veterans, PTSD was not, you know, known at that time. And even for today, certain people, we have many people who have been deployed to Afghanistan, Iraq, and come back with PTSD related symptoms. So they are encouraging. I cannot tell you, reading this memo, how many times I've seen the word liberal consideration. They're basically saying, look, if you have some type of condition where it might have been documented or not even documented in your medical records that you had symptoms or you did things that could now be evaluated as you did it because you had PTSD or it says PTSD related condition, they are encouraging you to document, you know, get the documentation, submit it to the Discharge Review Board or the Board of Correction of Military Records. And obviously, you know, with your evidence, you need medical records. And it could be medical records from after when you were discharged. Maybe when you were discharged, they didn't quite know what you had, whether it was, you know, 1980 or 2014 or 2011. You had maybe instances of misconduct, which now looking back, the VA or a civilian provider said, this is PTSD related. You could then, under the guidance, the DOD says to these board, they're telling the services, look, if you get discharges like this from members and there is any evidence of PTSD and there's a reasonable chance that they had PTSD, hey, you have to determine they had PTSD at the time of the discharge and look at that. So that's the one factor, but it's not only that. Then they have to say, okay, was this PTSD the cause? Was there a nexus between the misconduct the member committed and the PTSD, so that the PTSD kind of caused the misconduct. And then they want you to give liberal consideration to consider these discharges and perhaps upgrade them. And if you'd like, I could talk about, I mean, two cases I read, you know, recently that talk where individuals' discharges were upgraded. I can talk about that if you'd like now or later.
Yeah, no, this is a good time, certainly. It's, you know, the ground rules as far as no identifying information, but yeah, go for it.
Yes. Yeah, Ryan. Actually, you know, the DOD, they are so transparent. You could actually go on the website. There's something called the, you know, the reading room, and they have all the agencies for the Air Force, the Army, the Navy, Coast Guard. They actually list, they don't have the names of the individuals, but they actually summarize cases. And that's where I looked at all these. I looked at about 100 cases of all the services, kind of look at, since I retired in 2012, what they're doing since 2012, since 2014, when they had this new policy. And literally, I printed out and was reviewing about 100 cases. But I saw a very big trend as far as the cases I read, where they're actually giving upgrades to discharges in cases where members had some type of, for example, I'll give you one case, an individual, you know, served from 2011 to 2014. He then deployed to Afghanistan. He had misconduct, Ryan, ranging from drug, I'm not condoning drug abuse, but he used drugs. He was discharged for drug abuse and other misconduct, AWOL. He got a UOTHC discharge under other than honorable conditions and was discharged from the service. In his medical records, there was some note of he has some medical conditions he's going to need VA care for. And later when he applied for his discharge, he had other documents from doctors saying, you know, this young airman had PTSD. He actually was in, I believe, Afghanistan, and he was hit by an IED. He had a witness who described him as very upbeat and carefree before his deployment. And after he came back, he had a totally changed demeanor. So it was very clear that this, his deployment, his PTSD that he experienced. Then the board found there was a nexus between that and his misconduct. And I mean, he had a lot of misconduct. This might be an unusual case, but he had, you know, drug abuse, AWOL, et cetera. And his discharge was upgraded from a UOTHC discharge to an fully honorable discharge. And even his discharge reason was changed from misconduct to what's called secretarial authority. So in cases where they don't even want the members DD-214 to talk about misconduct, they change it to something called secretarial authority. So there's no negative implications. So that's one case, you know, very recent. It's not, we're not talking Vietnam veterans, but it's all another case very similar where it was an Army case. Someone discharged under very similar circumstances, really. They determined from the documentation he had PTSD-related symptoms, and the board members, you know, found that, hey, there is a nexus between this. And based on the overall conduct, you know, they still evaluate based on his overall conduct, based on, you know, all the factors in the case, they believe it was unjust to give him a UOTHC. So these are just a couple of cases that I read about, but I don't want your audience to think, oh, okay, you have a UOTHC, you were deployed, and you're just going to get a upgrade. I mean, the facts are very important. The facts of the case, did you have symptoms? Some people deploy and come back, you know, with no symptoms, no issues. So obviously, you know, you have to be credible and tell the truth. But the point is, the Department of Defense wants you to come forward if you're suffering, if you have evidence, you know, of PTSD, and they want you to get the benefits you deserve.
Yeah, thanks for that overview. I'll definitely put a link to the DoD reading room. Is that behind a CAC card login, or is that available to the public?
No, it's available to the public because I don't have a CAT card. It's it's called the Air Force. The reading room, but I could also send you a link to that because that's where I went on and read all the, and they have the cases for every service, as I said. So Army, of course, has the most cases just because they have the most personnel. But anyone could look at that. And that's where I actually read many of these cases.
Perfect. Yeah, we will definitely put a link to that in the show notes and this article that we're going to have about upgrading a military discharge characterization. So I'll definitely put a link to that and give everybody those resources. And if they are seeking counsel from a whether that's an Area Defense Council or, you know, military JAG, or if they're seeking it from a civilian, they can hopefully find some case studies or case law that can help their case as well. So let's talk a little bit about the process going through the Military Discharge Review Board and kind of what does it take? What does the veteran need to do? How does that process work overall?
Okay. Yes, Ryan. I just want to just backtrack one second. As far as most of these individuals, of course, you know, they're veterans. So unfortunately, at the time that they're applying, they would not unfortunately be entitled to a military defense counsel. You know,
sure.
But there are, you don't have to also go to a civilian attorney. There are agencies, you know, the VFWs, there are people who do this, you know, agencies or nonprofits that do this also for free and help people. I happen to be a civilian attorney who does this, and not to plug civilian attorneys to do this, but I just want to factually say the cases I have seen where the discharge has been upgraded is where there was counsel. And the only reason is because the counsel knows, again, what what the board is looking for. They know how to say, okay, you know, this is what my client had. This is the basis. This is what the reg says. So they can articulate it better. It doesn't mean an airman, any veteran can't do this on their own. And definitely with all the resources, they probably can. But I will say, you know, make sure you do take advantage of either free resources or someone who could help. So sorry, I just want to say that because they would. All right. So as far as your question, the process. Yeah. So the process for the application for the discharge review board. What the member does initially is they just get a DD form 293, which is right online, and they fill it out. It's very self-explanatory. So if you do it yourself, you fill out all the information online, and actually there's, you know, pretty much every item, it tells you what you have to put in. But basically what you want to show is, okay, why was my discharge unfair? Why was it inequitable? Why was it impropriety? So you have to show evidence. So what is evidence? Well, it's either your sworn statement, you know, saying this is what happened, but, you know, the Air Force or the Army didn't know that this when I was being discharged, but this is why I was discharged. My supervisor was out to get me. I'm just making up stuff, but I'm telling you stuff that actually, you know, veterans actually say in their upgrade request. And it could be true. I'm not discounting it. Or they could say, you know, I had a medical condition that I kept going to the doctor, I kept going on base to the medical, and they kept saying there's nothing wrong with you. But hey, I went to a civilian doctor and they diagnosed with me PTSD. So you have to get, you know, something that the board has a basis to look at, to evaluate, or, you know, getting statements from people of about your good conduct during the military. So you get all that together and you submit it to, you know, you mail it in to the service that you were. And the DD-293 actually has the address you mail it to. You could actually also email it online. I do, as a tip to members, I definitely recommend you check the box that say you would request a personal appearance. It doesn't mean when it comes to your case, like if when it's your turn, you could say, I can't make it, sorry, if you know, if you're not in the area, but at least, you know, request that right. And if you're allowed to go in, if you can go in person, I highly recommend you go in person to present your case to the board. But once the board then gets that case, and do you want me to go into that, or I'm sorry, like what point?
Yeah,
do you want
no,
me to
yeah. If you just want to give us a brief overview, because that will be very helpful for those who are listening who are going to be filling out their application, so just so they can understand, kind of, I believe you. There's five members on the board, but can you talk a little bit about what they do and what they're looking for and some of the things they consider?
Yes. So the board, there's five members. One is the lawyer. So I was the lawyer on the board. I was the senior legal advisor. So there's always a lawyer because, of course, the lawyer is looking for the, you know, the legal aspects of the case. But there's a personnelist. There's a medical person. And we had an MD, all active duty. Actually, we also had a civilian who did reserve type affairs because we also looked at reserve cases. There was usually a command type, you know, pilot or navigator. And in the cases, of course, there was an enlisted, you know, senior NCO. So what would happen? So a case would come into us, come into the office, and the personnelist actually on the board had all the cases, and they would look at all the case and summarize all the information, and all the board members would get a copy of everything. So we would, you know, so as a lawyer, I would look at everything, look at the case and look through the discharge to see, I would actually comb through it to see, is there any error? You know, obviously I was working for the Air Force. So, you know, it's not our duty was to actually look at under the justice, due process, equity, and fairness. So if there was an error, we wouldn't just say, oh, let's, you know, let this go. Our duty was to look at it and see if there is some evidence that there was something, you know, done wrong in this case. So we would look, and for example, I give the case of, I mean, I've seen cases, not many, but, you know, someone had two LORs and they were discharged and we're thinking, how the heck, you know, did this pass legal review? And they weren't for serious things. It just seemed like they were like probably sick of the guy. I don't know. For some reason, they wanted to discharge the person. And, you know, we said, that's not fair. You can't be discharged for two letters of reprimand. I mean, you need an Article 15, evidence of rehabilitation. So in that case, as the legal person on the board, I would, you know, talk to the members about, hey, this does not seem like it was, there was some impropriety involved. It's not legally sufficient. Or in cases, so we would actually then all discuss the case. We would have a discussion about the case. One person would present the case to the board, and we would have a private discussion in a boardroom and talk about the facts of the case and talk about the person presented the case would talk about every single instance of misconduct and say, you know, he or she did this. These were the circumstances. And we all asked questions and said, well, you know, give us more information. You know, why did he get an LOR? So we would actually meticulously walk through all the misconduct alleged. And after we heard the entire case, we would then vote. We would vote on the case, the five people, and it was like majority. So it's, you know, if the person got three votes to upgrade, we would then, that would be a recommendation to upgrade. It would then, we were not the final person, it would go to the designee, Secretary of Force, MRB, and he or she would then say, yes, upgrade or not. But it was just a really enjoyable process because we got to really, you know, look at cases and make sure if there was some inequity or unfairness that, you know, we were like a champion for the individual to say, you know what, you were wronged and we're going to correct that wrong. So that's pretty much how we looked at it. So for your listeners, I mean, really, we don't, it's not like a rubber stamp. We look at everything because I keep saying it was such an honor to work there, but it really was because I always, you know, I always was someone who voted, you know, for the underdog. I always wanted to make sure anything where there was some evidence of unfairness that it was brought out. And we all looked at cases like that and we could just tell sometimes there was something not right. And in those cases, you know, we would vote to upgrade and usually it would be upheld. So again, Ryan, just to tell you, this is not like, you know, 90% of the cases are upgraded. It's cases, I don't even know the percentage. It's not even, you know, I'm not really certain, but I will tell you with the PTSD, it's, you know, new guidance. You have a pretty good chance if you have some evidence of PTSD that was not taken in consideration.
I appreciate you bringing that up. It's really important because there is that misconception, and I know you've addressed this already, but that misconception is out there, and I've heard this by many people. I don't care if I get discharged because after 6 months, they'll upgrade it to an honorable or they'll upgrade my discharge, but there is no automatic upgrade, and that rumor persists through, you know, kind of barracks lawyers and people who think they know what, but they, you know, it's just, they don't know that. So it's good that you reiterate that it's not a rubber stamp and there is no, you can't really give a percentage of how many are approved or not because it's really case by case basis. And you've just really shown how much you and the other people on the discharge review board go through each case, very meticulously. So it's really good to know that information. In terms of applying for a discharge upgrade, what kind of timeline are we looking at for a veteran? When should they make this application? And what happens is there a kind of window that they need to do that in?
Yes. So, I mean, you got a pretty long window. It's 15 years, actually. So it's 15 years from your date of separation. So if you were discharged in 2000, you have until, 2015 to submit it. And that's to the discharge review board, though. So the discharge review board, that's your first level because that's the agency that actually looks to upgrade discharges. But if you miss that window, then you could apply to what's called the Board for Correction of Military Records. And every service, and this is, you know, online, every service they have a different name. The Naval Board for the Air Force, it's the Air Force Review Boards. Board for Correction of Military Records, actually, Air Force Board for Correction of Military Records. So that's an agency that corrects military records. Now, actually, just so you know, that they have a 3-year time limit from when. So if you want to correct a record, let's say you got an Article 15 or you felt that you got a bad discharge, but it's now 20 years later after, and you can't apply to the discharge review board. You can apply to the Correction of Military Records Agency. And they say you have 3 years from the time of when the error occurred or when you discovered it. But they say if we do not consider your case, if that's going to cause such a injustice or injustice, we will review your case. So they're pretty, they can be liberal as well. But that's the next agency that reviews a case to determine if your discharge should be upgraded if you've passed the 15 years. The reason I say that 3 years, technically you have 3 years, but again, that's your last level to fight an unjust discharge. And if you prove that there's some injustice, they will review your case. And just again, to reiterate, with the PTSD, this new guidance in 2014, it specifically tells the boards, these review board agency, be very liberal in the time limits, because we want these people to, if there's a wrong in their records, we want to correct it. So I don't, you know, they don't care when it is. They will waive the 3 years, the 15 years. It doesn't matter. But it's specifically for those type of cases, because, again, they want to correct any injustices that occurred. But yeah, that's, so it's the 15 years mainly. And then after that, the correction of military records review process.
That's great to know, because I know that many of our listeners who are from the Vietnam era or, you know, even different eras, who have that PTSD or other extenuating circumstances, they can still apply to their services board for correction of military records and make that application. Now, obviously that new guidance came out. So even if they were looking at the 3 year window, because they kind of opened the door, that's still within there. But as you said, they will be a little more lenient with that, that window as well. So is the Services Board for Correction of Military Records, is that process fairly similar, or is it a little bit different, or do you have experience there?
The process is similar. So the agency I worked at the Secretary of Air Force, I worked under the review board's agency that did not, I worked at the Secretary of Air Force Personnel Council. I did not work at the Board of Correction of Military Records. They're actually right next door to us, but it's a very similar process. They again looked at error and justice, but I'm very familiar with that process because in my civilian practice, I've actually helped clients submit the DD form 149 is what it is, to correct records, to correct errors in justice. So I've helped clients do those applications. So it's a very similar process. You're again bringing forth evidence that, you know, whatever the error is, it could be anything. It could be, you know, I have an NJP Article 15 that was not justified. Something was wrong in my OPR. In our cases, we're discussing my discharge was not correct. And I, not to go, you know, I won't give personal details, but I actually had the pleasure of helping a Navy veteran who he was literally, I mean, discharged, I think it was like over 20 years ago, actually. And I helped him submit his case to the Navy. It's still pending, but I can't wait to find the results of, you know, to learn the results. I hope his discharge is upgraded, but it was a matter of principle to him. He wanted his case upgraded because I totally believe, based on the facts of his case, there was injustice. And inequity, everything. So I hope his discharge gets upgraded. But again, the reason I'm familiar with that is I actually help clients submit requests to those agencies. But it's a similar process. One thing, Ryan, for your listeners, unfortunately, it's a long process. They have a lot of cases. So this is not something you're going to get an answer in a month. I mean, I'm telling you, you get a little response back saying, you know, we have to do 90% of our cases within, I think it's like 10 months. It's a long process, but let that not deter you. You really, you know, if there's an error, you need to get it corrected. And again, with these PTSD type cases, I believe they're even trying to add more personnel to help expedite those cases because it involves medical care. So, similar process of detailed looking at the records to see if there's some error in justice to take care of military members who have served their country. If there was some error or if the military, you know, did them wrong by making a mistake, which happens.
Yeah, thank you for walking us through that process, Farah. And you know, you mentioned for your client who is the Navy veteran, many of the people that I've spoken with as well have that. It's kind of the principle of the matter. They feel that they served honorably in the military, and then for one reason or another, their discharge was not an honorable discharge, and they feel that something was not handled properly, or that they got the short end of the stick. So I really hope that this podcast and your guidance here and the corresponding article that we're going to have on our website will really help people to understand this process a little bit better and serve as a resource for them. Again, you know, this is not specific legal advice for anybody's specific case, but just understand that these resources are available. Use this as some guidelines. And if you do have specific questions, as Farah mentioned, if you are in the military, there is the judge advocate that you can seek, you know, base legal counsel, any of those things. If you're in that process of going through a discharge, There are civilian lawyers. There are also volunteers and people with training at certain veterans organizations such as the VFW, American Legion. Call around and see if there's somebody in your area or if they have somebody at one of their national offices that can help you. You can also reach out to Farah. Her website is, Farah, why don't I let you tell people how they can reach you?
Sure. Yeah. It's actually my, FarahOsbeck.com, my first last name.com. And on it, it has my contact details and just type of practice I do. But for the discharge, if individuals really have a question about their discharge, I have a phone number or an email. You'd be happy to just talk to someone and I can kind of tell them if I think they have a chance. I don't want someone to waste, their time or money trying to hire counsel. If I feel, again, there's no guarantee, but if they tell me about their case, I can just consult with them to give them an idea of, wow, you really might have something or there's no way, in my opinion. So I can give an honest assessment too before someone decides whether they want to or just give them some pointers. But yeah, I'd be happy to. Again, it's really like a passion for me, helping people and righting wrong. So and I wanted to say to you, Ryan, I did discover you from your website and I'm truly amazed. I can't how many resources you have on your website that I just know are very time consuming, creating resources, getting it out there to educate members. I actually yesterday was looking at one of your resources about the GI Bill because it's something I'm actually dealing with a case regarding the GI Bill. And I noticed you had a great picture, actually a graph of showing, I think it was your case of how you transferred benefits to your children and how important it is to do that. Because some military members do not, do that before they leave the service and they potentially lose the benefits that they reap, which again is, we're talking about a lot of money. But I was so impressed when I saw that. I thought, wow, you really put your heart and soul into that to, educate military members or veterans on just their rights about everything and their things they should know about. So I really commend you that's how I discovered you, but I know it's a lot of work and really bravo to you for all the work you do on behalf of military members and veterans.
Well, thanks for the kind words, Farah. I do appreciate it. This website, this podcast, everything is really my way to give back to a community that's given me so much. I wouldn't be where I am today without my military service. And, I don't know if you've read my background, but I served on active duty and then I had an 8.5 year break in service. And then I went back and joined the Air National Guard. So it's mostly because I just missed being part of it. There's something about being in the uniform and being part of something that's bigger than yourself. And I loved it and I missed it so much that I went back in and I wouldn't trade it for the world. And that actually brings up one more point about the discharge characterization. RE codes, reenlistment codes. I had this on my notes in front of me. We didn't discuss that. The reenlistment code, can that be affected by your discharge rating? And in that process, if your discharge is upgraded, can that change your RE code and make some people eligible to either go back into the service or perhaps join the Guard or Reserves?
Absolutely. Yes. I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't discuss that. But that was also one of the, when the member requested an upgrade of the discharge, they also requested change of the RE code. Because a lot of times, and actually I talked about the GI Bill, but there are a lot of great veterans out there who miss it. And I know you're feeling about missing. And I retired in 2012 and I've had a couple of jobs. Nothing beats being on active duty. I loved every minute of it. And I the sense of service. So I totally understand where you're coming from. But there are a lot of veterans who serve and then they miss it. They want to serve their country, honestly and sincerely. And they request an upgrade of their discharge and an RE code change. So that's definitely one of the things when their discharge is upgraded, it can be changed so that they have a code. I don't remember exactly but the code to allow them to reenlist, which is a huge thing for veterans who want to reserve and serve their country and perhaps, stay in as long to retire. But that definitely is one of the things that are changed. And I think on the form, it actually asks, what do you want changed? Which one of them is the RE code. One is the narrative for the separation. So yeah, that's a good point that you brought up.
No, I'm glad that that I remember to ask about that, because the RE code is very important. I've spoken with many people who have tried to get back into the military and for one reason or another not allowed to. And so for anybody who is listening, if you're going through this process, be sure to pay attention to the RE code. That's your reenlistment code, and that gives you the ability to go back into the military or not, whatever your code is. So Farah, I do appreciate your time today. Is there any other messages that you wanted to share with our listeners?
Now, the only thing I can think of is really, for people who are currently, because I'm sure your listeners are, you know, partly active duty and maybe veterans, but if you're currently in the process of, you know, something bad happening, you're being discharged, it is very stressful. I mean, I was a defense counsel, you know, and as a civilian lawyer helping people who are undergoing, you know, stressful situations. Sometimes in those situations, you know, military members, veterans, they just don't want to deal with it and they waive all their rights. You know, I just encourage you, talk to, you could go, every base has a, you know, you can just go talk to the military defense counsel. If you want to, you can, you know, talk to a civilian counsel, but you really should talk to someone, understand your rights, because at the time, I've heard from clients, I just didn't really want to deal with it. I just wanted to leave. I've heard from officers, I didn't, you know, they waived their discharge boards. I know, actually, you know, we talked about enlisted, but this does apply to officers as well. I had an officer client. He actually told me, I'm not revealing the name so I can talk, he did not want to deal with all the stress, everything going on. He just wanted to waive his board. He didn't want any attention. He didn't want media attention. So he waived everything and he got the worst possible discharge, where if he had really, I said, God, I wish I was around when, you know, you were undergoing this. I would have loved to take in your case, because I feel his case was an absolute injustice based on all the facts, which I really can't go into because they're pretty high profile, you know, things that were in the news. So that's the really thing I would want to tell your listeners, you know, don't, it's very stressful. And if you're stressed, you know, there's places you can go to and talk confidentially. Don't give up your rights, because later it's a lot harder to do. Take care of it and take care of yourself and make sure you get what you deserve. So that's the one thing I would want to emphasize. Make sure you know your rights. Talk to someone who understands the process, who can help you through this, whether that's the military lawyer, civilian, or any other organization that helps people in your situation.
Well, thanks so much, Farah. We covered a lot of ground here, and you know, I can't reiterate to anybody who's listening that if this applies to you, really take the time to fill out the form properly, get some help through any of the resources that Farah mentioned. You can also reach out to her at her website. It is farahozbeck.com. That's FERAHOZBEK.com. And, you know, I'll have a link to that on our website, and also link to her LinkedIn profile as well. So you can reach out to her there. As always, thank you for listening and thank you for your service.
Thank you for listening to the Military Wallet Podcast with Ryan Ginnall. For show notes or more information about military or veteran benefits, please visit www.themilitarywallet.com.
The Military Wallet Podcast is not connected with the U.S. military, the Department of Defense, Department of Veterans Affairs, or any other government agency. It is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Thanks for listening, and thank you for your service.